God made a covenant with Abraham. And this was very early in Abraham's life, before he was even called Abraham. You notice the text says Abram. God renames significant people in the Bible because God is fashioning them and giving them a purpose, and that's often signified by a change in their name. So a young Abram enters into a covenant agreement, a relationship with God. And it was, the description here is very typical of biblical covenants. People in those days, kings making treaties with each other, generals establishing peace after a war, and they would cut up animals and hang them on a line, and then each of the two people in the pact would pass in between the animals, in and out, and get blood smeared all over themselves as a way of saying, may this happen to me if I break my side of this treaty. May I be cut up and hung on a line. So in this instance, the Lord tells Abram to cut up these animals and hang them up. But then a dark cloud comes over, and Abraham is very afraid, and he enters into a deep trance. And in the trance, he has this vision in which he sees this smoking pot passing in between the parts of the animals. God makes a treaty, a covenant with Abraham, and he says, look at the stars in the sky, and look at the sands on the seashore. As numerous as those will your descendants be. He is promising Abram, in biblical language of those days, immortality. You see, belief in the resurrection of the body didn't enter into Judaism until about the time of Christ, about 100 years before Christ. And in Jesus' own day, the Pharisees were believers in the resurrection, and the Sadducees were not. They were divided over that issue. But in the time of Abram, that wasn't even a dream. So you lived on in your descendants. Any immortality that you might have would be carried on through having many children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, etc., etc. And so when God says to Abraham, your descendants will be as numerous as the stars in the sky, he's promising him immortality. Now, in the second reading, Paul is talking about bodily resurrection, not living on in your descendants, but your body will be transformed to be like his glorious body. And that's our belief as Christians, that our body, no matter what happens to it, it goes into the grave and it turns back to dust, or it's buried at sea, or it's cremated, or whatever happens, somehow, through the grace of God, every single person's body is going to be refashioned, transfigured into the likeness of his glorified body. So that's the context for the gospel story about the transfiguration. Jesus appears to his disciples, his three main ones, Peter, James, and John, transfigured in glory. And his clothes are dazzling white, and his face is as bright as the sun. And a dark cloud comes over them, and they are fearful, and they go into a kind of a trance, just like Abram. You see the connection between these two stories. And Peter, overtaken by the moment, says, let's build three tents. In other words, let's make this permanent. Let's hold on to this experience. And who wouldn't want to? But of course, the experience disappears as quickly as it came. All of these visions, these experiences of our dynamic union and love with God, they are fleeting moments. And we can live on them for a long time, but they are fleeting and we can't control them. And even though we would want to build tents and hang on, it just doesn't work that way. But I think that one of the points we want to remember out of this story is Jesus and Moses and Elijah appear together, transfigured in glory. The reason Jesus has this glorified body that, at least in a trance, those three can see, is because there is no distance between him and the Father. They are looking at the Father. They are looking at the glory of the triune God. But we're made in God's image, and we would be transfigured. We would shine forth that glory too, but our sin gets in the way. Our sin makes us opaque. Where Jesus' body is transparent and you can look right through his body and see the Father, you could look at one of us and see the Father too, except sin makes us opaque. And so all they see is us. Lent is that time when we want to let go of our sin so that we might become more transparent, that we might become more transfigured like Christ. In the Trinity, there is no thought of self. They all exist for the other two. Sin is about self. Concern about self, selfishness, it's concern, it's fear about the loss of self. It's this obsession with self. And there is no obsession with self in the Trinity. But we are in that image. We are made like God. There should be no concern for self in us either, but unfortunately we are under the effects of original sin, and everyone around us is fearful of self, controlling, obsessed with self. There's a reason that in Lent we practice self-denial. Self-denial is learning how to let go of myself. Jesus says this in the Gospels over again in different ways. In order to enter into the kingdom, you must deny your very self, take up your cross, and follow me. You must make yourself vulnerable. You must lay down your life. The only way to gain your life is to lose your life. All these sayings of Jesus, it's all coming at the same point. We have to get rid of this obsession with ourselves. Fearful, controlling, protecting. We have to become more like Jesus, who puts himself out there and makes himself vulnerable. Let's go back to that Genesis story. Normally, in a treaty, both parties would pass through the animals. But in this story, only God, in the form of the smoking pot, passes through the animals. He doesn't require Abraham to do it. For us humans, treaties always have to be bilateral, don't they? I'll go this way if you will. I'll do this if you'll do that. Everything has to be bilateral and equal because I'm not going to make myself vulnerable to you. But this defines God. He passes through the animals and Abram doesn't. For God, it's unilateral. The history of God's relationship with humans has been he has put himself out there and made himself vulnerable, and he has been stomped on and ignored and abused all through human history. And he's okay with that because he loves us enough to let us do that to him. Because he is so confident in his own being and in his self. He isn't worried about himself. He isn't concerned about the way we treat him. He only wants to love us, even if we don't love him back. And Jesus, God in human flesh, comes to show us what humans would look like if we acted like God. And it looks like the cross. It looks like putting himself out there and unilaterally loving his neighbor, and we end up killing him. That's why the church has always valued martyrs. Martyr means to witness unto death, to be like our Savior. to lay our lives out there, make ourselves vulnerable, and get killed for the sake of love. Lent is that time of year when we look deeply into ourselves and let go of ourselves. Let go of our obsession, our fear, make ourselves vulnerable, unilaterally love our family, love our neighbor, and allow ourselves to get abused.